This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today we are in Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne.
Where are we, Lionel?
Well, we're in...
I'd say the police station by the sounds of things.
Well, we're in Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne in the Alps. It's been bugging me all afternoon. I've had a real sense of deja vu here today, and I couldn't place when I'd been here before, but it was where the prologue of the 2011 Dauphiné was, when I covered that, and it just all came back to me when I walked up the road there this afternoon, nestled in the mountains here, lovely scenery. And
is this not also where a stage finished in 2010, where the stage went over the Col de la Madeleine, the one that David Miller was off the back the whole way?
Did either? I haven't even said hello yet.
Oh, sorry. No, none of us have, Daniel. You were reading, sitting there reading the paper. Pay attention. Lionel was describing where we were. I'm Richard Moore with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And what's your name again?
Daniel. You see, now this is interesting. You see, we can see the Madeleine from here, but there are two roads at the Madeleine on this side. Not many people know about the second road.
He says furtively. Well, what's so special about the second road?
I've never been up the second road, but there is. But and the tour hasn't either.
Daniel Freeb, by the way.
It's not a secret, though, is it? That second road. It's not like it doesn't appear on maps. It's like, you know, they're not trying to hide something from us, are they?
Depends how good your map is, Lionel.
Okay, on with the show. That riveting start. Okay, Lionel, what happened today?
Romain Bardet delighted the whole of France by winning stage 18 of the Tour de France at Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne. Fantastic attack. His descent on the Glandon was superb. His ascent of the Lacet de Montvernier was majestic. And his descent into Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne was just as good. He held off Pierre Hollande. So the French had a 1-2. A little bit of a tame battle behind for the GC riders. Chris Froome, one day closer to winning the Tour de France, I would suggest.
I mean, Romain Bardet was a real revelation last year's Tour. Age 23, was sixth overall in the end, and with Thibaut Pinot, you know, he was one of the great flag bearers for French cycling. He's not quite as well positioned overall this year, but does a stage win represent further progress, Daniel?
I think it does, in the sense that this year he's really gone into a new dimension. He's won World Tour races, he won a stage in the Dauphiné, and he's just won the stage in the Tour de France now.
Very similar stage in the Dauphiné, similar type of win, wasn't it?
Yeah, and today underlined what a fine descender he is. So I think he has made progress this year. Whether he'll ever be a general classification contender, I don't know. There is a real feeling in French cycling that Bardet lives his life as a professional cyclist almost, well, to the fullest, and it is almost too much, in the sense that he's constantly thinking about what Skylights refer to as marginal gains. He is constantly thinking about how he can improve, and there is not much of a sort of pressure release, a pressure valve. But you know, it's certainly working for him at the moment, isn't it? I mean, one area in which he does need to improve in, and he mentioned this yesterday, was that he had a poor day yesterday after the rest day, and the rest days for him at the moment are a real Achilles heel. He's had this recurring pattern throughout his career that he's been very poor on the next day after a rest day, and he had a very novel approach, I'm sure he'll revise it now after yet another bad performance after a rest day. But he basically does an awful lot of kilometres on the rest day behind a car, usually on quite a big climb if you can find one, and it's obviously not working for him.
His sister, Lisa Bardet, who we spoke to last year on the podcast, still works in the press room, and she has to go around her duties now, handing out results sheets, not really showing too much emotion, but she must be absolutely delighted. They're a very bright family. I was hearing from Cathy Lamond, who's got to know Romain Bardet a little bit, and she said that he idolises his sister, who's very bright and scored one of the highest marks in university, apparently, here in France. And Bardet is an engineering graduate, is that correct? Don't nod.
Yes.
Lionel, what were your thoughts on the stage? We had an absolutely torrid journey here, about 4.5 hours in the car.
You always leave too late,
you guys.
You know, you're up too late in the morning, you don't get going, you never go for a run in the morning, you never do anything. You just mince about until about 11 o'clock, and then you decide you might as well turn up to the stage.
Fair enough. Can't argue with any of that. That's just about what happened today. Then we set off in the wrong direction, which didn't help matters. Then we came back, and we came a clever little shortcutty route, went over a very gnarly little twisting climb and came bumper to bumper with a BMC car being driven by Jim Okovitz with TJ Van Garderen in the passenger seat.
Was there a bit of a standoff?
Well, it was like an immovable force meets an unstoppable object, the other way around.
Yeah, it was. Van Garderen was going to the airport, I assume, leaving the Tour de France after pulling out yesterday, and we were desperately worrying about whether we were going to run out of fuel.
We have history of running out of petrol in this precise area of the Alps, don't we? TJ Van Garderen spoke to the media this morning in Gap and was still very disconsolate after abandoning yesterday. Said that he hasn't defined his programme for the rest of the year yet. I suppose the Vuelta might be an option, but of course he's ridden well in Colorado before in Utah, so it might be that the team decides to send him there. But of course he's never ridden a Grand Tour apart from the Tour de France, so it might be a good time to cut his teeth in a different three-week race.
The Vuelta could be good. Chris Froome didn't commit yesterday when he was asked whether he would ride the Vuelta, but I understand that he will ride the Vuelta. Well,
we got the very strong impression from Dave Brailsford on the rest day that he feels this is the best formula now for a Tour de France rider to do the Vuelta and not lose too much condition in the winter, because you're coming from a very high level already into your winter break and you retain a lot of that when you start training again for the new season. So it seems to me as though Brailsford has decided that is the way to go with Tour de France riders and with Froome.
I imagine Nibali would be among the other favourites. Listen, let's talk a bit more about today's stage and the overall picture. But before we do, let's hear from one of those riders who is fourth overall, Geraint Thomas, who I spoke to briefly at the finish. Here he is. Geraint, are you surprised to find yourself in this position?
Well, yeah. I don't know words to describe it apart from swearing, you know. It's crazy. I think, I even sat up on, like, Mer de Bretagne and Mer de Huy, and you know, that first week I was just, you know, in the wind and just wasn't even thinking about GC, and then all of a sudden you stumble upon it and everyone's like, ah, yeah, you know, just see if you can hold it. And it's like, it's kind of just waiting for that day to just go bang. But fortunately, I've certainly feeling it now, but I'm sort of, so is everyone else, and I can hang in there and, you know, maybe the top four, as they say, in Valverde, have that kick on me and that extra punch on the climbs. But I think the rest, I'm just as strong as really.
Yeah, I mean, you're locked into this race, you're thinking only about this one, but in the back of your mind, are you starting to think about your own future and what you might, you know, where you might put your focus in future years?
Yeah, I think I'd love to give it a good crack, but at the moment I'm just focused on this, and maybe ask me in Paris.
So we heard there from Geraint Thomas, who expressed his amazement really at being in the position that he finds himself, fourth overall. And he mentioned in that interview that he, in the first week, he sat up on the Mer de Huy and Mer de Bretagne, and I looked back at those stages, he lost 2 minutes on those two stages. Now, if he hadn't lost 2 minutes, he lost over a minute on the Mer de Huy and 59 seconds on the Mer de Bretagne. If he hadn't lost those 2 minutes, he'd be much closer to Alejandro Valverde, who is third overall at the moment, and the podium would be a real possibility. It still is a possibility. Valverde was distanced briefly today on the Col de Glandon, but still a lot to play for the next couple of days. But, you know, a tremendous performance by Geraint Thomas. Any observations today on the overall? There wasn't much movement there, was there?
It's status quo, and I actually think that Movistar should be fairly happy with things as they are, because these two Alpine stages, the first two, were never the most likely to yield big time gaps, yield big opportunities for Quintana. And it's a wearing down process as far as he's concerned. You know, those. I still think that Froome made a mistake following certain attacks yesterday from the likes of Nibali, Contador. However, Froome does sound very confident, even to the point, I would suggest, of sounding slightly complacent.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, the thing about these next two mountain stages, the one to La Toussuire and the one to Alpe d'Huez, is they're very short, 138 kilometres, 110 kilometres. What we've seen in these first 2 days in the Alps is the big break go, 20-odd riders each day, and the pattern of the race is set that the big break goes, they contest the stage win, and then the GC riders kind of, you know, a little bit of shadow boxing behind. I think the next 2 days will be different in the sense that there won't be the same willingness to let that big break go, because there certainly won't be the time to bring it back, and because the final two climbs give the likes of Contador, Nibali, Quintana as well chances to win the stage. So it's going to be a totally different pattern of racing in the next 2 days. And if it's really fiery and aggressive early, you know, with 100k to go, say, or, you know, on the first of the big climbs, that's really the only chance, I think, of Sky cracking.
I zoned out a bit there, Lionel. Did you point out that they're both very short stages?
That's what I said. They're both very short stages.
Sorry, had I repeated myself saying...
No, I'm
just zoning back in. Because that is a key thing.
If you're not listening, how do we expect anyone else to be listening?
It was just a momentary lapse. I'm sorry about that. But, yeah, these short stages do tend to produce far more explosive riding. And it was two very similar stages to these two that were the last two mountain stages in 2013, where Froome did lose a bit of time on both days, Alpe d'Huez and Semnoz. He had problems on Alpe d'Huez when the car got stuck behind and he couldn't fuel. Richie Port got the time penalty for going back to the car and getting him a gel. But he was in trouble there. And Semnoz as well. Quintana finally got his stage win and dropped him. On both stages, Quintana dropped him. What was interesting about those two stages was that even though he was clearly suffering, Froome didn't curb his sort of attacking instincts. He attacked on Semnoz just before being dropped. He attacked on Alpe d'Huez when he was clearly in trouble. So he does have that tendency to almost bluff a little bit. As you say, Daniel, he does seem eerily confident almost, and yet there are two very difficult days to come.
And I think Movistar can smell blood as far as Sky are concerned. Sky was stronger today, but they have looked a bit brittle in the last few days. They've been very reliant on Geraint Thomas for a lot of this race, actually, in the mountains. And I think there's a feeling in the Movistar camp that if they can get rid of Thomas or get rid of the other domestiques, then Froome does have this tendency to want to follow every attack. And if he starts doing that and Valverde's going and Quintana's going, they can hit him with the old 1-2. And it might get quite exciting. But certainly, speaking to a few people today, everyone who hasn't won a stage and who was targeting a kind of breakaway like the one that eventually succeeded today felt that this was their last opportunity today, because they expect an almighty shootout between the GC guys tomorrow and on Saturday.
Well, I spoke to Robbie Hunter, Cannondale Garmin sports director, and obviously they had Heyerdahl and Talansky in the break again today, trying everything they can, and certainly got the sense that tomorrow will be more difficult simply because of that reason. That big break isn't going to be given the same head. So we will wait and see.
Tomorrow and tomorrow.
You are listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar, with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney and Daniel Fripp.
We were played back in there by a bit of singing that we heard around the Movistar bus from some Colombian fans who were waiting to see their man, Nairo Quintana, although there are a lot of Colombians in the race, and they greeted all of them enthusiastically. And it was quite, I think I maybe mentioned already, that Quintana, you know, with that poker face of his, really doesn't give much away, but I could see him on the bus waiting to come out and meet these very vocal fans, and he was smiling and he clearly getting quite geared up for it. And there was a nice connection between them.
Hope he wasn't getting too geared up.
Daniel, don't lower the tone.
Sorry, but come on.
He was smiling and happy to go and see some of his countrymen. So that was a bit of Colombian singing that we heard. And it kind of chimes with our Pedlar de Charme there, Eurosport Pedlar de Charme. We should hear our Eurosport Pedlar de Charme jingle as well. Here it is.
And now, le Pedaleur de Charme, supported by British Eurosport.
Yes, Pedlar de Charme time. I presented yesterday's winner, Simon Geschke, with his T-shirt, tweeted a picture of that earlier. He confirmed that it meant more to him than his stage win to win the Pedlar de Charme. He was actually genuinely quite pleased. I gave him a choice of colours, yellow or white T-shirts. He chose white, and he seemed genuinely quite pleased with the T-shirt. So today's Pedlar de Charme, a lot of nominations for Romain Bardet, but we felt to give it to the stage winner 2 days in a row would be a bit lazy on our part. Maybe Bardet will get it another day, but the winner today is the winner. Is winner.
Mm. Daniel.
Winner Anacona.
Winner Anacona. I saw him, he was third on the stage. He's a very classy looking rider anyway, but he gave his bottle to a small child beyond the finish line, which I happened to spot, and I thought that was nice. Most of the riders do that, to be honest, but he did it with real panache.
Mm. Do you know who else who I would have nominated? Now thinking about it, I've completely forgotten about this. Vina Alexander Vinokurov this morning. I saw him riding to the start from about 60 kilometres where Astana was staying, to the start, and he was holding up about 120 cars behind him, but he was going at a fair old lick. He was going at about 50k an hour down this descent, but still holding up about 120.
It might alienate a significant portion of our audience.
Fits in, but anyway.
If we gave it to Alexander Vinokurov. So winner Anacona, will try and give a Pedlar de Charme t-shirt to him tomorrow, won't we, Lionel?
We will. We've got a backlog, haven't we? Maybe we should divide up tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, Daniel's got to still give Mark Cavendish his t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. I'm busy tomorrow morning, though. Very busy.
What are you doing?
I'm seeing Mark Madio.
Pedlar de Charme t-shirt for Mark Madio, maybe?
No, I don't think... Well, Mark Madio has declared an embargo on all internet-related activities, I have learned, because he started this Tour de France with a bang, doing web chats, blogs, Snapchats, etc. I think he's got slightly tired of the whole fiasco, the whole internet fiasco, as he feels it was. And yeah, so he might take umbrage at being offered a Pedlar de Charme jersey when we actually do get nominations on the internet, don't we?
Down with the internet. He writes a very good blog on Cycling News. It's a very readable...
He's still writing it. I thought he'd given up all internet-related activities.
Maybe he doesn't know that it goes on the internet.
Probably. He probably thinks it's delivered by carrier pigeon and distributed around the village by, I don't know, some troubadour.
Some primitive method. Anyway, I mentioned earlier that I had delivered the Pedlar de Charme t-shirt to Simon Geschke. He obviously won the previous day's stage. He was very emotional afterwards. I wanted to find out what it was like riding a stage after, the day after winning a stage, for sort of fulfilling a childhood dream. He said it had been a dream of his since he was 15 to win a stage of the Tour. So as I gave him the t-shirt, I caught up with him at the finish, and here's what he had to say. Simon, I was going to ask you what it's like the day after a stage win, but I think I had a little bit of an insight there between the finish and the bus. A lot of support for you. Were you aware of that out on the roads today?
Yeah, definitely. It was just a great day for me, even though I had the worst leg so far on the Tour, surprisingly.
Is that just a hangover from... Not a literal hangover.
Yeah, and the head is somewhere else. It's still in a different world. It was a race to race, and yeah, I just tried to enjoy it, even though I had really bad legs. Half of the bunch said chapeau to me, and it was just really nice to have all the reactions. Also, a lot of people on the road were yelling my name, so it was really a great day for me.
You were very emotional, obviously, after the stage win. How long did it take you to come down from that last night?
Oh, it took me a while. I mean, I was not able to sleep till 3 o'clock, so I was also pretty tired this morning, but... The evening was still a lot of emotions, and just so many things happened after the race, and it was hard to calm down.
Well, Simon, I'll let you get on the bus and get showered, but you were our overwhelming favourite for Pedlar de Charme yesterday, so I'm going to present you with your t-shirt just now. Yeah. What does it? This must be mean just as much as a stage win, does it?
Definitely, yeah.
Follow us on Twitter at cycling_podcast or on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com.
Okay, before we finish tonight's podcast with a very special treat, a little round of reminders and thanks for friends of the podcast, sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. You can hear our newly released, yet as of yesterday, Perk, which is our exhaustive look at doping in cycling, which we've been recording over a few months, and it's over 2 hours long. One of our listeners actually tweeted a picture of a couple of delicious cakes that she managed to bake, or tarts, or crumbles. I think they were crumbles, but she had baked them in the time it took to listen to the Perk. So just shows that you can multitask while listening. I hope people are enjoying that, if that's the right word.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to it all in one go. You can pause it and then go back and listen in instalments if you want.
It's amazing, the technology. Anyway, if you become a friend of the podcast, you get behind our paywall, listen to the Perk, as well as our other special podcasts, an interview with Mark Cavendish, special interviews during the Tour with Dave Brailsford and Chris Froome, an event that we did recently, the Imperfect Tour de France. There's lots there, so please do sign up for £5. Thank you to our sponsors, Jaguar. Thank you to British Eurosport for helping us out as well. And before we leave tonight's podcast, we've got a very special feature that Daniel's been promising us since the start of the tour. Daniel, we'd like to introduce it.
Well, it requires no real introduction. It is me, Filippo Pozzato, Ciros Cognamiglio, in a hotel bar on Tuesday in Gap. That's all you need to know. Just enjoy. It's the moment everyone's been waiting for on this Tour de France, the big moment. It's arrived in the third week. It is the meeting we've been trying to set up for 2 years now between Ciros Cognamiglio and Filippo Pozzato, both big favourites of the cycling podcast. Ciro, how does it feel?
Excellent, marvellous, because also I was waiting for this moment for such a long time, so I'm so happy, you can't imagine.
Filippo?
For me, it's the best moment in this Tour de France. I'm waiting for this moment. It's 6 years I'm waiting for this, and I come in this Tour de France for this.
Yes, because, as you know, Filippo won 2 stages in the Tour de France in his career, if I'm not wrong, one in 2004 and the second one in 2007. But I guess that he's more happy now than in that 2 victories.
Ciro, you need to explain to us, first of all, why is it that Filippo is the only Italian rider that you're really interested in talking to?
Yes, because maybe many of our listeners, they should be fond of cinema, no? Cinema, films. And certainly, you know, the famous film with John Malkovich, being John Malkovich, no? I was thinking about this. But for me, a better film should be being Filippo Pozzato. This is the real question, because in my opinion, Filippo Pozzato is the son that every mom would like to have. Is the brother that every guy would like to have, and so on. So I must confess that when I will be no longer involved in cycling and as a professional journalist, Filippo Pozzato will be the only person that I would like to continue to keep in touch in this world.
Filippo, is this true? Are you the son that every mother would like to have?
Yes, of course.
Filippo, what do you think of Ciro now as a world star? You've seen his T-shirts. I must confess, he's on Italian websites. Does it surprise you? Probably not.
No, it's not a surprise. For me, Ciro is the best journalist in the world, and for this is the only journalist I speak only with him, because Ciro not understand of cycling, and I like this.
It's true, Ciro.
Perfectly true. Perfectly true, because as a matter of fact, I don't know really well how about writing, how about asking to riders, because I don't understand almost anything about cycling. So for this, the relationship with Filippo is being better and better, simply.
And what do you make of people's tour so far?
For me, Pippo is doing a good tour. I mean, it's really maybe not so under the light of the stage as some other riders, but me, that I know him very well, I know that he's doing a good tour, and you should trust me.
Should we trust him, Filippo?
Yeah, it's a good, very good tour for me. I think it's the best tour in my career, this tour, yeah, really.
Who is the new Filippo Pozzato?
Doesn't exist now, and I think that would never exist a cyclist like Filippo. Not in my life.
Well, I think everyone will agree that was a memorable few minutes. Ciros Cognamiglio and Filippo Pozzato. Filippo, grazie, and Ciro, grazie.
Cool music.
Yeah, well, you know, we wanted to go for a kind of lounge bar vibe. That's sort of the lounge lizard. That is Filippo's natural habitat, isn't it? It's actually Ciro's lining up As the driver for the Gazzetta dello Sport at next year's Giro d'Italia, because Ciro is very pessimistic about Filippo's chances of getting another job.
Is he out of contract at the end of the year?
He's very much out of contract. He's solidly out of contract. Not going to renew with Lampre. Etics actually had a look at him. Trek were in the running.
Well, history, of course, because Filippo Pozzato rode for Mapai.
For them, yeah. Trek were having a look at him as well, but Luca Guercellino is another old mate of Filippo's. He can't afford him, so I don't know. And you know, all the
is he expensive?
I wouldn't imagine so at this point. But
what would it cost to buy Filippo Pozzato?
What are you thinking? We should make an offer using the friends' money for the pod. We could sign him up for the podcast.
We were talking about taking over the Europe Car team, weren't we, yesterday? It's the cycling podcast team, but we need a few more friends for that. Maybe 5.5 million he's looking for.
Euros. 5.5 million euros.
We got that.
No, not lying around anyway. No.
Just another, yeah. So Filippo Pozzato, how much salary is he commanding these days?
I don't know. He's on a lot of money at the moment.
Take a
He's on 500,000 euros or more at the moment. Well, he is a year. And
Lamprey, take a good look, long, hard look at yourselves in the mirror.
Yeah. Do you know where I think he might end up? I think I am cycling. Because I am cycling pay relatively low salaries, 1 year contracts, big bonus programs, big bonus schemes, and I think that might suit him down to the ground.
Wow, you heard it here first. Let's wrap up for tonight. We've got our producer Jonathan Rowe joining us for the next few days. Say thanks to our producers as well, John Mooney, James Wickham, Alex Ady, who've been working on Kilometre Zero programs as well as our regular show. The Kilometre Zero, tomorrow is our final Kilometre Zero, the 15th and final edition. Today's was a special one on the vehicles. Tomorrow is your work, Daniel. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this morning I had a breakfast of sorts with Prudy, Christian Prudhomme, friend of the podcast.
As well as being friend of the podcast, what else is he again?
He's director of the Tour de France. And we talked about a typical day in the life of the tour director.
Brilliant. Look forward to hearing that. Thank you very much. Well, thanks for tonight. Thanks, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
And thank you, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
For the best analysis, discussions and interviews from the 2015 Tour de France, listen to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.